I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. The Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical based on the Rick Riordan novels, is one of the most popular musicals produced today. It is the top licensed musical in the Concord Theatricals catalog since its premiere in 2014. Since then, the show's opened on Broadway and has had productions throughout the world, including an original London cast recording that's out now from Centre Stage Records. The new album features 15 minutes of musical material not on the original cast recording, and it brings to life the record-breaking West End production. Rob Rokicki, who wrote the musical's music and lyrics, joins me now to talk about the album, writing the show's score, and the life this show has had beyond the 2014 run off Broadway, two U.S. tours, another off-Broadway run in 2017, and a 16-week limited run on Broadway in 2019. I'll ask about how he came to write the score as well as how he writes. Visit robrokicki.com for more. We spoke 10 days ago with Rob joining me from New York City. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Rob Rokicki. Mr. Rokicki, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Had you read the Rick Riordan books prior to say, starting to write the score to this musical?
I had not familiarized myself with Rick's work beforehand. I was told about the project from a mutual friend who had been working with Joe Trace, who had adapted the book as a play from the theater a company called TheaterWorks USA, and they were the ones that got the rights and had commissioned it as a play. And then they decided, oh, this thing should be a musical, and this thing should be a rock musical. And so they reached out to a couple people, and one of those folks was a mutual friend named Joe Iconis, who's a music theater writer who's been an old friend of mine. And he said, Rob, you should put your hat in the ring for this thing. And that's when I read the book. I fell in love with it, and that was, I was like, oh, I could see this as the musical. And I wrote some demos, and that's how I got involved with the piece. They chose, a couple other writing teams submitted demos as well. And I think it just, I was a good match.
It was, the show was staged here a couple of years ago in Vancouver. And I was talking to some people, and I must have read this online, where it was said that it seemed like your music and lyrics and the book just seemed to be one and the other, and they couldn't tell where one started and where one one ended. What is it like to be part of this universe? Because these books and this whole universe has just a couple of generations now have just connected with it, haven't they?
Yeah, it's really quite an honor that the fans in particular, that this fandom has embraced the show and this adaptation, and Rick Riordan and his team as well. Since it's been in print in 2005, I think is when it first came out, it's the number one selling American fantasy series, I think, in and that's a huge legacy to be a part of. I think, you know, YA, you know, young adult novels are always relevant because I think people always feel at some degree a level of arrested development where they, still trying to please mom and dad, no matter if you're in your 40s or you're in your teens.
Yeah.
And I think that's why, you know, Harry Potter resonates. And I think these Greek myths in particular, they're, you know, they've been around for so long, and Rick's take on them is so irreverent and funny, and it leans into the dysfunction of these Greek myths in such a witty and fun way that I think it's kept these books and this book series has been kept alive for a number of years because of how much it resonates with kids, and then those kids grow up and they read the stories to their kids and on and on. We worked really hard to just be good stewards of the property over the years to make sure that we were trying to match Rick's vision, especially the tone of kind of a lighthearted romp mixed with real heart, real stakes. I think we were fairly successful.
Yeah, there's a lot of heart. I mean, I went back and listened to the original cast album. We're supposed to be talking about the London cast recording, which has new stuff in it. But in listening to that for the first time, that's what I was struck with, is just how much heart there was and how much meaning there is in every song. Like, the songs really do. I mean, I learned, having not read the books myself, having not known what was in the story, say, I learned about a lot of these characters and could see their development in the songs themselves. I guess that's something that's your gift in terms of as you're writing the music and the lyrics, that you want to, say, move the musical along, if you will, in each song, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you're trying to, you know, a song has to do one of two things, either reveal character or propel the plot. Mm. And, you know, we were able to mine a lot of really awesome character moments out of the book, especially as we expanded the show, because it originally started only as like a one-hour Theater for Young Audiences production, and then it just kept growing and growing. And in every iteration, we were able to kind of dig a little deeper into the show, and I think that's part of also the fun of how we told the show. You know, the limitations of a small group of actors was kind of like, here is this group of scrappy young people who have kind of been thrown into this world that their parents have kind of not taken care of for them, and they have to kind of make their own way. These kids from broken homes kind of figuring out how to tell their story their way. I think it can be quite empowering.
I'm sure, Rob, you've heard from people over the years now who have talked to you about how this music speaks to them. What is that like to know that you've captured something about, say, being different or trying to find one's identity or finding the optimism in surviving even?
Yeah, I mean, I think it has a lot to do with the spirit in which the show was created. I mean, Rick wrote the show as a bedtime story for his son who has ADHD and dyslexia. And I think a lot of folks who are on different spectrums, different identities, they all really grab a hold of this fandom, which is very inclusive. And the spirit of how we created the show has kind of carried it along with that. I mean, the show was originally part of Free Summer Theater in New York, so a lot of kids from underserved communities got their first taste of a live stage show. This was many kids' first musical, which is what an honor to have that. And then, you know, as the tour happened, there was an organization called the Half-Bloods Helping Half-Bloods, because, you know, they're half demigods, you know, they're demigods, they're half-bloods, and they would sponsor kids in other cities who couldn't afford to get a ticket or maybe was having trouble getting the ability to see a show in a city, and they would sponsor kids to be able to see it. I mean, you don't see that in a lot of other fandoms. So, you know, that to me is kind of the legacy of the piece and of Rick's world. It's a great place to be. It's part of what we kept trying to instill in every production we've done and with our directors, is kind of welcoming everybody to camp, you know, that feeling you get when you're at camp of you know, discovering who you are, finding your people, you know, and a sense of camaraderie and community.
And we certainly need that sense of community nowadays, don't we?
Oh, my Lord. I mean, I don't want to get into politics and things in the world, but I will say that, like, the show is developed in early 2013, and then the world kind of shifted, and when we were able to open the show again and change it in 2017 to be the larger production that it is, it did impact things, and the kind of, especially the message of Bring on the Monsters, the end song, mm-hmm. which is very much a call to action for young people to say, hey, look, you don't have to follow in the footsteps of your parents or leaders. You have to decide for yourself what is right and wrong and fight your own battles and take agency. And I think that's it's a little scary, but it's also very freeing. And I think that's a really positive message to send out to young people who are feeling very frightened or stuck right now.
Yeah, I love that. Love that part of the show where it does give the listener or the young person listening, say the older person listening, even the idea that they can take on the reins themselves and decide for themselves what's right. Because I think we all know what's right. It's just that we need that sort of push to get going and participate, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and finding a community that supports you to say, you know, I got it. Or you know, this is I have to do this because I know it's not just what's right, but it's what I don't know.
It's what we need to do with this. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of a moral compass in some degree. Yeah.
You said something a moment ago that I'm still thinking about it and I thought it was really cool that this is probably the first musical that a lot of young people will see and you mentioned that it's an honor.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's not something you think about as you write music and lyrics, right?
No, I mean, we were just trying to write a show that we love, that we connected to. I think if you try to write really specifically to a certain audience, you tend to water it down or you're catering to other people's tastes. I think, like, I've always found the most success with songwriting when it's something that I am connecting to personally, and then, you know, the universal always comes out of that specificity. But, you know, the good news is that, you know, we're basing it on a wonderful series that a lot of people already connect to. But, yeah, it's really quite thrilling to know that a lot of young people are seeing, well, because it's also it's a show that doesn't, there's no it's a show about friendship and parents and children. It's not a show that's really revolving around necessarily romantic relationships, high school life, those mm-hmm. kinds of things. Like, that's a part of it, but it's bigger than that in some way, which I kind of love. And with fantasy, which is, you know, I think often an unexplored genre in a lot of stage shows, then I think it gives you license to be a little bit more creative and fun and let your imagination run wild, which I think is really exciting for kids in the theater to see what else is possible, let their imagination take off so they can be present and have a communal experience, you know, rather than being on their screen.
Well, just think of that kid who not have experienced musicals heretofore and see this and think, I didn't know there were musicals in the world, and now I need to know about other ones, you know?
Well, I think it's also, like, the kids that don't really love reading often will find themselves really captured by Rick's story because of the humor and the adventure. And I would hope that the same could be said for a show where it's like, oh, musicals, you know, and people have that eye roll of what they assume as kind of a stale Broadway sound or whatever. And I think it's really fun to have a visceral rock and roll show. I mean, like, as much as I adore classics, I mean, one of my favorite shows is Candide, but one of my other favorite shows is Hedwig and the Angry Inch. So I think there's room for kids to engage in a way that feels like it's speaking their vernacular in a really fun way, with kind of exciting, propulsive rock music.
So there's new stuff on this London cast recording. I guess this is mm-hmm. What are these pieces of the extras? Are they things that are added to the production? Are they things that haven't been heard before?
Well, it's a mix of all of that. I think, you know, they always say a show is never done. You just have to stop working on it. And when it was announced that there would be a major London production, my book writer Joe Trace and I, we kind of jumped at the opportunity to explore, you know, other moments in the show that we could expand. We added a cut song, which ended up creating like a really more meaningful through line for our characters and a reprise to that. And then on top of that, The original recording was the off-Broadway cast recording, which was a four-piece, and it was me doing a lot of overdubs in the studio. Here we had more musicians, five or six, and we had 15 actors opposed to six. So I had twice the vocal capacity here. Yeah. So I was able to add ensemble textures, the orchestrations from Broadway and the tour that we were able to capture. So it's tons of things that I think there are a lot of little nuanced, smaller differences and then a lot of more significant ones. In addition, we were able to kind of capture some of the scenelets that were underscored, which I always think are fun because part of the joy of listening to a cast album is kind of immersing yourself in the world of it and, getting these little underscored, scenes with Medusa or whatever. It's you get a sense of being there in your imagination, like a radio play. And it was really joyful to create those. And no one's heard those before unless you actually got to see a production. So it's really exciting to get to share that, with people, because otherwise, cast albums are one way that people get to experience a show. Otherwise, because it's a live medium and you don't often get a GoPro shot. Yeah. It's the only way a lot of people are getting an opportunity to hear your show or get experience to your show. So the more you can pack in there, the better.
Yeah, as I said, I started with a London cast recording. I went back to the original one, and I can't tell you how rich the second one is, but at the same time, how it's great that you've captured so much of the show in these two albums, and not to mention covers that people do, that we see online and the sort.
All right.
What are some of the albums that you had growing up, the original cast recordings that you might have had, say, on CD growing up?
Oh, man, my parents only listened to classical music, so it's very, I think, ironic that their son decided to go into rock musicals, but I did listen to a lot of great music theater albums from them. We would listen in car rides on to, like, again, I mentioned, like, Candide, that's one of my favorites, and Bernstein. But also Sweeney Todd, that was a huge influence on me. I'm born on Halloween with my twin sister, so, like, I love genre in musicals, especially, like, horror. Little Shop of Horrors in particular. I really love Hedwig and the Angry Inch. Tommy was a huge influence on me. They're the classic gateway drug musicals of my era, which are like Les Mis and Phantom. But also Chess, I think, was a biggie for me because I could hear elements of classical music and pop writing together working in such a really cool way. But also I listened to a lot of music, a lot of eclectic kinds of music, not just theater albums, but I think my favorite ones are the ones where I really put myself in the shoes of the characters and, oh, what's Javert doing? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That kind of radio play of your mind going through the entire musical.
When you sat down to write this show in particular, Did you think of other writers, say, not just in sort of the musical genre, but other, say, people who wrote music or wrote lyrics? Did you have things that you emulated that you stole from you?
Oh, yeah. What was it? Picasso, great artist, or good artist borrow, great artist steal. There's lots of, things that I think influence, I wear my influences on my sleeve. I think there's something about New Jersey bands that are like the working class, like everyman kind of thing. So a lot of Jersey bands influenced me, whether that's Bon Jovi or Bruce Springsteen or My Chemical Romance. Or like there's something about struggling through adversity with those kinds of bands that really connected with me. Even like the idea of Born to Run, the little Glockenspiel line in a song like that found its way into a song called Good Kid that is the main song that Percy sings in the show. But there's other influences, I love Gustav Holst's The Planet, so I tried to find little ways of how do you make a guitar sound celestial? What are some things that you can do to to open things up. But yeah, a lot of pop music that I grew up with in the 90s as well that connected with me. You know, I'm a product of the grunge and alt rock scene. But it's always the characters that would kind of dictate the genre, you know, or the style. You know, I love, you know, Annabeth is a character who is very analytical. She's the daughter of Athena, so she's super smart. She's into planning and strategy. So her sound was very much based on a Rhodes keyboard sound, which I thought felt very computer-like, and I leaned into a lot of like piano rock from Ben Folds 5 and bands like that. So yeah, a lot of influences of kind of like what the character was going through kind of helped me decide on instrumentation or even how I wrote the song.
What about the habits of writing themselves? I mean, Sondheim was famous for, you know, using a particular pencil. And the sort, do you have things like that you do as you write?
Deadlines. That's all that dictates kind of how I got things done. We vetted this show a lot with Rick Riordan's agents, with producers. So we had a lot of presentations and I was constantly rewriting wherever I could. So I think a lot of it was, done it at my office. I have a day job where I lay out scores to junior versions of Broadway shows. It's been a very nice kind of a day job for me that I can always come back but it's also, it taught me economy in songwriting, in terms of like really getting to the crux of what you need to say. So I wrote a lot while at off hours after the office, and then would kind of take it into everybody and play it for them to see how it would work. There was no one pencil, no one keyboard. I kind of, it was by hook or by crook, kind of getting it out wherever I could. But there was such a spirit of play and fun in the creation of the piece that, it lent itself to that. Where I was just, under the gun trying to get the thing up and throwing whatever we had at the wall, grabbing whatever piano I could or guitar and making it that way. But there was a real freedom with that. I was music directing a show at one point and I turned to my guitarist and I was like, you're really good at heavy metal guitar. He's like, oh, well, I actually wrote the book on AC/DC, like literally the like Hal Leonard book on AC/DC riffs. This guitarist was like, show me a couple of those. I want to see what I could do with that for a character called Clarice. It seems like she has kind of a Pat Benatar vibe. What would be a classic rock riff? So it's fun when you collaborate with different people in different situations. Again, the kind of, form dictating function and vice versa, just kind of like what is this character, what they're going through, and then I can kind of figure out how to attack that moment, that song moment.
So I shouldn't ask you what comes first, the music or the lyrics, right?
It's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Mainly because I was also an English major at school. I went to the University of Michigan for musical theater, but also English literature and Victorian literature was kind of my main focus, and I think there's something really wonderful about a world building with those novels, but also when I was writing essays about the books I was reading, how I structure my essay with your thesis statement is very similar to how I structure my song. So I think about the hook, what is the hook musically and lyrically, what is the crux of what I'm trying to say, and then having everything in the song meaning to support that argument or that one thing. I'll play around sometimes with lyrical ideas first, but often it's a musical phrase or some intervallic relationship that leads me to that hook, that melodic way into the song.
There's a song that you wrote, and it's on the album. I can't even remember the name of the album now, but I think it's the Songs of Rob Rukiki. I'm Ready.
An oldie. Oh, yeah.
I've played that on my phone probably a dozen times this week. there's something about that song that I just love, and I don't know what to do. It's obviously the music is nice, But the lyrics themselves, I think, are so, how do I put it? They're very strong. They evoke so much of what this person wants to tell us. I guess on that album, you're performing this song, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how long, I meant to look this up. How long ago this album, when this came out, was this?
That was a while ago. That was like 2012.
Oh, really?
Huh. Over 10 years ago. It was kind of my introduction to, you know, it was one of my first shows I was working on that song came from. You know, every writer in their early 20s wants to write the great New York, you know, experience.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I was, you know, that show we had, the housing crisis happened and there was, you know, our producers kind of pulled out we did end up having a production in D.C. that was really wonderful, but I think there was a bittersweetness to the whole experience of being a New Yorker, I think, of it's constant change, right? And your burger place is gone that you frequented, but all the memories that were there, right? Like, it's you have to constantly reinvent yourself, and you're living with all these different versions of New York and all these different versions of you. And, you know, you have to let something go and move into something new. And I think, you know, at the place I was at in my life and kind of looking at this character, it very much aligned of like, you're not a kid anymore. If you're going to tell somebody how you feel, you gotta step up and really, you know, and take action. That whole album kind of, that song, kind of led the album, really, of characters kind of taking that step. Thank you. Song really resonated with me.
It says a lot about living in New York, but I mean, you know, I live in Vancouver, and if I wanted to understand what New York was, I could do that in a song like that, I'm Ready. And living in a big city like Vancouver, which changes a lot like a big city does.
Constantly, yeah.
It's relatable on another level altogether. It's such a rich song.
Oh, thank you. Well, honestly, one of my favorite bands in the whole world is a Canadian band called The Weaker Thens. They had a song called One Great City about Winnipeg that definitely has been in my mind for many years. There's something about like the tangible things of the. You'll have to listen to John K. Sampson's lyrics of kind of like are just heartbreaking and funny at the same time. And I think like you have to have a bit of a sense of humor about it all, because it is so kind of existential in one way. Nothing is permanent, so you have to kind of hold on to what you have. And, you know.
Indeed. May I ask what you're working on now? Are you working on another show, say?
I'm working on a couple different things. For the past couple of years, I've been working on a musical about an oceanic cult. It's a little bit of Heaven's Gate meets Scientology, called Experience Marianas. We did a big kind of presentation of that production workshop thing in the UK. And I've been writing with a show with Anna K. Jacobs, who's a wonderful writer who wrote Teeth, based on that horror movie. She wrote that with a Pulitzer Prize winner named Michael R. Jackson. And Anna and I, you know, that's about an influencer. It's called The Real Gemma Jordan. And that was really fun to kind of work in kind of very, very pop synth world music that I hadn't done before. And I'm working on something else I can't talk about that I almost have the rights to.
Yeah.
And then this project that I worked on many, many years ago is finding a whole new life. It's called Monster Songs. It was designed as a graphic novel that you can listen to, and then it got licensed as a stage show as well. That is now being developed for the past couple of years in Germany as a virtual reality video game. And it's almost complete. It just takes a long time to do all the coding, but the artwork is stunning, and it's really cool to see. I'm interested in accessibility and also in immersion. So I think it's a interesting to see how, you know, music and visual arts and graphic illustrations can all merge together with technology and give you a really interesting visceral experience. You know, if you're playing a game that's 3D, but you're also experiencing a story, it's narrative driven, but you are these different monsters and looking at their archetypes, and it's quite cool. So that's called Monster Songs, and it's for pre-order now, I think, on Steam. Steam is the website for downloading video games and things like that. That's like open source.
It's fascinating to think that 25 years ago, a project like that could not have happened. Or it could have happened, but it would be quite prohibitively expensive for people accessing it, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, the fact that, you know, we're using, well, just in terms of making it, you know, for one thing, we're using motion capture, we're using things that would cost prohibitive years ago, but also, you know, the album exists, the game will exist. You don't have to actually go to a theater necessarily to see it. It'll be a virtual theater. But I do love also the communal experience. So I love that the show can be licensed and you can do it with, the animatics come with the licensed version of the show that my illustrator created, Dave O'Neill. So you can choose to use those and project them, or you can come up with some other creative way of finding your monsters with puppets or whatever. I love the idea of playing with media in different ways, playing around with your production in fun, unique ways and tailoring it like that.
Well, long may it continue with all the work that you're doing. I'm a big fan. It's been such a pleasure talking to you today. I so appreciate your time, Rob.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me.
The original London cast recording of The Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical, is out now from Center Stage Records. Rob Rokicki, who wrote the musical's music and lyrics, joined me on the line from New York City and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunta.